NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Life can throw a lot your way in the morning. You might be battling drop-off times, while your kids are battling imaginary monsters or their shoelaces. But no matter what life brings, Life cereal puts a smile on everyone's face. With 24 grams of whole grains and unexpected sweetness in every serving, it's sure to please even the pickiest eaters. Help start your mornings with Life cereal.
I really love my life.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll look back at the big tech trends that appeared on the scene in 2024, and we'll throw an eye to 2025. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, we'll also take a closer look at the Alex Jones and InfoWars versus The Onion debacle. But let's start with a nice look back at 2024. DC Callahan of Shore Valley Investments is with me now. DC, I always love when you're on the show or when I chat to you in general, because you, like me, are a tech fan. You're also a little bit of a tech skeptic, I think, at times as well. Like, you don't just embrace everything with big arms wide open. And I think 2024 has been an interesting year, because even when I was doing the gadget guide with Pat commented that there was no one big new product this year. What we've seen is obviously incremental improvements on some gadgets, but the big talking point of 2023 as it was, or 2024 as it was in 2023, is AI. When you look back at 2024 as a whole, would you say it was a good year for technology?
I think it was. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned gadgets, because you're dead right. Like, I actually ended up buying all of the, you know, I think the promise of the year was some sort of an AI gadget. So we had all sorts of things from the rabbit device to the humane pin to, you know, Meta Ray-Bans, which I did end up buying. And yet, as you said, like, you know, and Pat being a good judge of public sentiment, there was no winner device this year. There really, really wasn't. I think it was a super important year, because I think, you know, like, my day job in Shore Valley Ventures, we're an AI investment fund. We've been investing in AI since 2017. So we do kind of feel a little bit like the world finally caught up. And I think what we saw this year was a lot of the ground being led for next year being the year where I think, actually, outside of all the tech nerds like yourself and myself, I think next year is the year where we start seeing, you know, your average individuals get some sort of a benefit out of AI.
Yeah, like, I think at the start of the year, my inbox was flooded by every single person, every single company saying, you know, our platform now has AI, but they didn't necessarily explain the point of it. It was just to be seen in the club of having AI. And one thing that I do hope for next year, and I've seen a little bit with Microsoft, but I do hope that companies engage the average Joe Soap in terms of education and informing them how it'll be beneficial. Like, a few weeks ago, we had Glenn Sheridan, I want to say, from Salesforce on the show, and he was talking about how AI agents are helping customer service. That's a practical example that benefits everyone. I think a lot of the stuff has been almost novelty. So I do hope that you're right, that this was sort of laying the groundwork for next year to be the bang moment of the, oh God, I could actually use this. With your, like, genius hat on, where do you think the average consumer will start to see it? Like, where is it going to trickle down? Because it is going to be a trickle rather than a flood, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and I think you'll see it. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The very, very first place we'll see it will be in customer service. I'm actually in the middle of moving house, so I've been having the experience, you know, of sticking nails in my legs, which actually is, you know, ringing all the utility providers to tell them, you know, I'm moving, blah, blah, blah. And like, we still know that, like, your call is important to us is the most ironic statement, you know, ever uttered by a human being, because it never is. But I do think, like, I've seen it already, and I've seen even some great Irish businesses already start to adopt AI into their customer service processes. So, you know, we're all used to ringing up our phone provider and, you know, press one for this, press two for this, press three for this. The reality is, you know, the phone provider already has all the information it needs. It's just pushing all of that onto us. I think what we're going to see in next year is customer service get a lot more personal, because it will be able to use all the data that it already has for you. You know, there won't be any of this like, oh, let me put you on hold while I go and look this or look at that or whatever. I think that's one of the promises of AI is, you know, we have all these companies that have for decades been collecting huge volumes of info on us. I think AI now allows them to start taking that stuff and applying it in super practical ways. Like, I know, you know, a mutual friend of ours there, Pat Phelan, and and Sisu, the Botox clinics and the aesthetic clinics that he runs, you know, they've moved their entire customer service stack over to an AI chatbot now that you can actually talk to about, you know, information about prepping for treatments and after treatments and all that sort of stuff. So I think we're going to see a lot of businesses that, you know, always wanted to do great customer service, but they just couldn't do it because of the volume of queries they're dealing with. Fingers crossed that next year will be the year that we'll start to see a bit of human improvement in that stuff.
Yeah, and I think one thing that struck me with in the conversation I had with Salesforce and their AI agents is that the smart brands are now realizing that using AI doesn't mean you get rid of your customer service teams. It's being smart enough to use it to help with the volume, but then having the human in the loop when, you know, the conversation's going around in circles, or when a human intervention is needed. And it's about getting that balance right, as far as I can see anyway.
It is the word by this time next year, Jess, like when we're doing the 2025 review, we will be so sick of the word of AI agents, because, you know, that's our like literally pretty much every single company we're investing in at the moment is an AI agent company. And I mean, the distinction really is, you know, if you look at last year and this year, you know, everything was about co-pilots. Everything was about an AI that would help a human being do something, but it still needed the human being to do something. It would just put the right information in front of them. It would shortcut a few steps. Whereas like what Salesforce are talking about and their new Agentforce platform is actually, the way I would describe it is, it's the, you know, in the, you know, information economy and the kind of knowledge worker space, like there is the equivalent of the awful jobs that nobody wants to do, you know, putting out the rubbish and all this sort of stuff. And the nice thing now is, you know, they're now building AI agents. Like, you know, as somebody who's done software sales for years, nobody likes being the guy who has to go out and like find, you know, the email addresses of like 500 people to start the sales process. The nice thing is now you can have an AI agent go off, do the low value work and come back. Like, I'm super curious actually about what will happen, say, in the radio and broadcasting world. You know what I mean? We all know a lot of presenters like to be very well prepped. You know, will there be AI producers going out there collecting the data on the news stories so that the actual producers can focus more on, you know, quality and timing and all that sort of stuff, you know? When will Pat Kenny have his AI assistant, you know?
Well, I can tell you now, Pat loves a bit of AI. He does dabble, I can tell you that for sure. And I suppose
somebody once said to me, and I actually think it's true, I think if you took the sum total knowledge of what Pat knows and his broadcasts over the year, I built an LLM model around it, you could have the sum knowledge of human history in one place, you know?
Well, Pat is my version of Google and Wikipedia and ChatGPT all in one person. I just spin around. We sit back to back and sometimes I just turn around and ask him random questions and he always knows the answer. But I suppose moving beyond the customer service side of things for a second, you know, I went to one of Microsoft's AI tours and they had a brilliant presentation talking about the time that could be saved in work, doing exactly what you just said there. So rather than spending hours on emails or going to meetings that could be emails, you can use and fully utilize their co-pilot to be more efficient in work. And I think the demo that they did was incredible and I left buzzing about it. But I do think they almost need to train every single person. Like, how are we going to get people utilizing this technology not to ask random little questions, but to actually get work done and to free themselves up so that they can go to football training at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday rather than 8 o'clock on a Tuesday? You know, get stuff done in a meaningful way that doesn't impact the quality.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. One is, you know, the reality is hopefully when AI agents come into play, you have a scenario where agents are talking to agents. So hopefully while you go to football practice, the work is still going on. But I do think there's a kind of a mindset shift, Jess, that's yet to happen, which is, I think for a lot of people, you know, when they hear the words AI, they kind of think of other sectors like fintech and medtech. They think that AI is a kind of a, you know, that it's a subsector of technology. And I think what they're missing or what they fail to notice is, you know, like I remember the days years ago when, you know, every single piece of software was on a server somewhere and somebody came along and said, hey, there's this thing called the cloud. We're going to move everything from servers to cloud. And then you had, you know, the days where everybody had apps on their laptop and desktop and somebody said, oh, we could put those apps on mobile phones. And everybody was like, why would we want it on a mobile phone? Like, we have it on our laptop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people need to realize. Like, AI is the next wave in that sort of thing, because it's essentially at its heart, it's this processing of information in a more efficient way. And like, the reality is we all know that most human beings we're terrible at processing information in a productive way. Like, we usually have all the information we could ever possibly want at our fingertips. What we're terrible at is putting it together. And I think what you'll start finding is it'll be kind of twofold, because as you said, there will be the work stuff and then there'll be the non-work stuff. I think when people start realizing now that you can decide, do you know what I really need next year? I need a holiday. I want to go to Italy in March and I'd love to see, you know, these sites, and that you can go off and you can fire them into something and it comes back and it says, well, here are all your options to fly out of Dublin. Here are all your options. Like, I think when people start seeing super practical examples of how much time they can save by having it process information, I think then, first of all, they'll want to learn it themselves. But I do think, like, if a business wants to start taking advantage of AI, like, there is an upskilling involved. I think maybe this time last year, you know, we were all talking about prompt engineering and prompts and, oh, you'll have to give the model, you know, you'll have to give the AI models a particular type of input to get the output you want. I think what we've seen in the last 12 months is an incredible advance in how the models and how the AI itself understands people. And I think that notion of, oh, everybody will have to almost be retrained in terms of like how they communicate with the AI models, I actually don't think that's going to be as big a deal as we all think. I think it's more right now, people aren't 100% certain of like what the super practical examples they are. I think if you're working in tech or if you're a deep tech nerd, you understand it. But fundamentally, if you're working in a warehouse, if you're working in a retail store, if you're working in anywhere where you're collecting or managing any sort of data, like, AI is, you know, within the next 12 to 24 months, like, AI is going to be part of that job. Like,
I suppose the reason I keep coming back to education, and I mean this for workers and people who want to use it in their own lives as well, is the conversation around responsible AI. And I mean that from the company's point of view and also then the individual's use of it. Because I say this all the time, but I'm still talking about putting manners on social media, and social media's been around for a long time. Now, I think it's good. Personally, I'm a fan of legislation and rules. I like a good rule. And so I'm happy to see the conversations around legislation and the rights and wrongs happening, not quite at the same time, because I think the technology has gone beyond it a little bit. But I just want to make sure that everybody understands not only the limitations of this technology, but also the responsibility that comes from utilizing it, whether it is booking your trip or doing some of your job or something that's going out into the world. I just think we need to have that cop on conversation as well.
Oh, we absolutely do. Because like, you know, we've talked a lot there about the upsides. But again, like, you know, this is still a technology that despite the trillions put into it, you know, there are parts of it that are still held together by sticky tape. And, you know, for a company, you know, there's still a lot of dangers in terms of if they put too much information into the model. You know, there was a famous case where, you know, a company introduced an AI model and it was like, oh, this is all the company's data, you know. You should ask it questions. And like somebody said, what's the CEO's salary, you know, and can I see their expense report for next week? And the AI gave it to them, you know, by accident, you know. So there is downsides. I do think the one thing that I find very interesting in this space, Jess, is, and I mean, look, for me, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm kind of disappointed that I'll give you the best example I can, to be honest with you. I wear, as my daily glasses now, I wear Meta Ray-Bans. So these have, you know, they're just ordinary glasses. They have cameras, they have speakers in them. And every time that I go to our office in the UK, I get off the plane and the first thing I hear is Meta AI has been activated in the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And then when I fly back into Cork, I hear Meta AI is disabled because you're traveling in the European Union. So we have, you know, like we definitely in Europe we're definitely kind of waiting and seeing. Like we've had probably the three big ones, you know, Apple Intelligence, Meta AI, and probably OpenAI Sora. And all three of these are not banned in Europe right now. They're just not available because the companies themselves have decided to not make them available because they know that Europe is regulating around this stuff and they're unsure. So I do think I do think we will probably, like, there's a little bit of, in America in particular, it's like there are no rules. It's a bit of like Mad Max landscape when it comes to AI. I do think we're being smarter about it in Ireland and in Europe in general. I'm super encouraged by the fact that, you know, our new Justice Commissioner in Europe is a Cork man. That's always going to be good for everything. And, you know, from speaking to him, I know that he, you know, how AI interacts with law is a huge priority for him. And then I think in general, I mean, we don't know. We'll have to wait and see how everything's out. But I know from being involved in the government's Enterprise Digital Advisory Forum that we've got some very smart people in government in Ireland, people like Minister Dara Cailleary, who was our digital minister. You know, he has done an incredible job of setting up kind of us for success next year in terms of, you know, starting to put together the various regulatory bodies, starting to implement the various elements of the EU AI Act. And I do think, like I'm not a big fan of big legislation, but I do think the EU AI Act in particular, it's a piece of European legislation that I think does tick most of the right boxes. You know, they've been very clear about they want it to be, you know, they want AI to be effective. But like, you know, on the most basic level, one of the things that they've outlawed is you can't use AI to measure the emotions of your staff at work. I think we're all okay with that. You know what I mean? I think we have a long way to go, but I do feel like, you know, so long as the regulatory stuff doesn't go overhead, I think we've probably, to your earlier point, I think we've probably learned a few lessons from, you know, the frontier land that we went through with social media. We waited too long to regulate a lot of that stuff. And it just meant that, like, it's you know, we're now kind of, there's a deluge, there's a flood, and we're trying to kind of fight against it. I hope that we won't see the same thing with AI.
Yeah, I suppose that brings us to the conversation that I heard quite a few times. I was on a panel at the Dalkey Book Festival, and one of the conversations that came up, Des Traynor was actually on the panel with me, and we disagreed on this, but, like, is being a European disadvantage, like, are we at a disadvantage being a European if you're also a fan of innovation? Like, are we being too cautious in Europe? What would your take on that be?
I have a lot of thought on this because obviously I've spent a lot of my career in the States and stuff like that. I think there's a kind of a yes and no to this. You know, as somebody who works with technology startups every day, I think there have been times in the past where, yeah, the American attitude of, you know, very much like, what did I say, ask for forgiveness, not for permission, has meant that, you know, American companies have been quicker to innovate. But it's also then created a lot of problems for them down the road. Like, for me, I think the big thing for us in Europe is we have to be very, like, I think we can have a regulatory agenda. What we need to make sure is that it doesn't, where, you know, it doesn't slow the velocity of European companies too much. And I think with AI at the moment, you know, we are seeing big brands like Mistral in France and others, you know, that clearly haven't been that hampered enough that they're not being competitive versus like big American companies. I think, like everything does, I think it's a balancing act. I mean, I think we have decided in Europe that we want a different quality of life than maybe in the United States. We want more structure and we want more organization, and we want, you know, we don't want to take chances with, you know, young people and other people could be very adversely affected by AI. So I think right now it isn't a danger, but the one worry I would have is that if we are too slow in like, if you give a bunch of innovators a set of rules to play with, well, then they'll innovate within those rules for the most part. The problem is if we don't make that playing field clear, and if we don't actually put out to them very clearly, here are the guidelines, here are the rules, you end up with a bunch of innovators who are sitting around waiting for somebody else to decide the pace of innovation. And I think we're probably getting to, we're probably, you know, the EU AI Act is out. It came into force earlier this year. I think we're probably at that point now where we need to start seeing some certainty about, you know, what the rules are and aren't, so that, you know, companies can head into 2025 with some sort of certainty about, like this stuff in AI in particular, super complex, takes a lot of time to build, a lot of time to train models. And they just need to have some sort of certainty about the rules that they're playing under.
Yeah, look, I think this is a conversation that we'll probably have to come back to a few times next year, because technology is not going to stop. And I also think the legislative side hopefully won't stop either. I just think it's a seesaw that we need to find the balance of. We could keep going, but unfortunately the clock is against us. DC, it's always a pleasure. You'll have to, next time I'm in Cork, or if you ever dare to set foot in Dublin, you'd be most welcome into the studio. I'm sure we could have an even longer chat next time.
An even longer chat. Listen, thanks a million, Jess.
Ah, the brilliant DC Callan of Shore Valley Investments. Let me know your thoughts. Was 2024 a good year for the world of tech? Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll look at InfoWars versus The Onion.
Imagine what's possible when learning doesn't get in the way of life. At Capella University, our game-changing FlexPath learning format lets you set your own deadlines so you can learn at a time and pace that works for you. It's an education you can tailor to your schedule. That means you don't have to put your life on hold to pursue your professional goals. Instead, enjoy learning your way and earn your degree without missing a beat. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.